The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Hey, Jerichoholics, it's part two of my conversation with Triple H today. The biggest guest ever on Talk is Jericho. Thank you so much for downloading and hanging out. Today with Triple H, we're going to talk about the Monday Night Wars, his classic feud with The Rock, the quad injury that almost ended his career, the personal heat between he and I that led to a lot of amazing matches, and of course, we'll find out how he found himself in the position to take over running the WWE from Vince McMahon someday. So much more for Triple H. If you like the first part, you are not going to want to miss today's show. But first, I need to grab a snack from my new Nature Box. I've got five more full-size snacks delivered in this month's box, and at the recommendation of @JimmyJames, who hit me up on the Twitter @TalkIsJericho, I did order the smoky barbecue peas. Good. Thank you, @JimmyJames. I threw those in my carry-on, and I will give them a try this week when I fly out to Monday Night Raw for my big cage match with Bray Wyatt. Gonna try out those smoky barbecue peas. You know why? Because NatureBox.com snacks are natural. They have zero trans fat, zero high fructose corn syrup, so I don't feel guilty about checking them out and giving them a try. They have hundreds of snacks to choose from as well. You can see them all at naturebox.com. And if you really like something, you can have it sent to you again and again. Just let the fine people at NatureBox know, and they'll make sure to include it every month. If you don't like something, same thing. Let NatureBox know, and it will never, ever show up at your house again. You choose your snacks, people! Of course, I got the coconut cashews again. I love those. Smoky barbecue peas as well. I tried something new. Also, the roasted Peruvian corn kettles. I'll let you know if I like those. And if you're digging a certain snack at Nature Box, let me know on the Twitter @TalkIsJericho. Tweet me your favorite. I'll retweet you and give it a try as well. And the other great thing about Nature Box, they ship for free. How fruit is that? Free shipping. I'll do you one better as well. I'll throw in something. If you go to naturebox.com/Jericho right now, you can get 50% off your first box. Yeah, that's naturebox.com/Jericho. Go do it now and get 50% off your first box right now at naturebox.com/Jericho. That's naturebox.com/Jericho. We love hearing from you, so keep on sending us your tweets and comments @TalkIsJericho. We do read every one of them, and don't miss the chance to take our very important listener survey at podcastone.com. Your responses will help us to make this show the very best it can be. It only takes about 3 minutes of your time, and you'll get the instant gratification that comes with knowing you helped us out. You can tell us how you really feel about the show and help us get to know you better. I want you to do it now. Take that survey, podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com. Keep those tweets and comments coming.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler,
best-selling author,
actor,
and lead singer of Fozzy.
Now
he's rocking the podcast world.
Nanu, nanu, shalma.
This is Talk is Jericho.
Talk is Jericho,
starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. The spell you're under has been broken by Chris Jericho.
Good morning, Vietnam!
That's right, Robin Williams, energy level. We're going to keep it high today because the People's Podcast has arrived. Let's go for a ride. Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is Jericho. If you wanna know who's on my show, I hope you're not annoyed. I say, yeah, boy. Woo, and guess what? It's Friday.
It's
what a day today. Welcome, Jerichoholics. How in the hell are you? Part two today of my conversation with Triple H is coming up. You don't want to miss it. We're going to talk the Monday Night Wars. We're going to talk about The Rock. We're going to talk about the personal heat between Triple H and myself back in the early days of my WWE career. So much to talk about. But first, I want to thank you for supporting my show and for supporting my sponsors. I want you to go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. All of my amazing links are there as well. Amazon USA, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada, eh? It's the easiest way to support the show. Amazon gives a small percentage of your purchase back to the show to help us cover production costs and all that fine stuff. And if you haven't gotten your copy of the new Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War? Get it right now on Amazon for only $5.99. I mean, come on. Amazon's offering a special deal on Do You Want to Start a War for $5.99. If you're going to do that, use my Amazon links to get it. Go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then hit Talk is Jericho button. Once again, you can find Do You Want to Start a War on Amazon for $5.99. Have you heard the record yet? Huh? Have you heard the songs I've been playing? I'm going to play another tune for you, one that people really dig. It's kind of one of the hits from the record that hasn't been a single yet. It's a cover from the 70s, ABBA, SOS, but we just tore it apart, rearranged it, and it's going to blow your head off. Here you go, some Fozzy right here on TIJ.
Where are those happy days? They seem so high. Hard to find. I tried to reach for you, but you have closed your mind. Whatever happened to our love? I wish I understood. It used to be so nice, it used to be so good.
Liked it, hit me up on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho, at Fozzy Rock. If you liked it, go check it out. Go buy it on Amazon for $5.99 and do it through my banner. Thank you for supporting the show and supporting my sponsors. I love hanging out with you guys twice a week. It's why I do this. It's why I enjoy doing this. Had a pretty crazy week, last couple weeks, of course, with the passing of Robin Williams. And then today, this week, with the passing of Joan Rivers. 81 years old. I think she pretty much died of natural causes. Talk about a pioneer. She was one of the first women comedians to kind of break into the scene, and one of the first women comedians to ever do stand-up on The Tonight Show. She had a really very abrasive manner about her, very self-effacing, said that she was a fatty when she was a kid. She used that quite often. She became the permanent guest host for Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show, which by then, that time was a huge, huge deal. Johnny Carson had a lot of pull those days. So just to get on Carson and have him praise you was a big deal. But to have him bring you aboard as a guest host was beyond incredible. As you know, if you listen to the Howie Mandel episode of this podcast, we talk quite a bit about his experiences on The Tonight Show. It's funny, Joan fell out of favor with Carson because she left his show to take an offer to do a show of her own, and things were never ever the same between her and Johnny after that happened. I too have an issue with Joan Rivers, or I did. Much respect to her, and I definitely appreciate what she did. But the one meeting I had with her, she was not my friend, shall we say. If you've read Undisputed, my second book, not to be confused with The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea, which comes out October 14th, just in a few weeks from now. This is in my second book, Undisputed, How to Win the World Champion in 1372 Easy Steps. I was at home in Tampa getting ready to see Paul McCartney. He was playing at the Tampa Arena. I hadn't seen him in a while. My friend Speewee was coming down. My friend Ribo was coming down. We were all going to go. My wise cousin Chad was going to come down, and we were all going to go check out McCartney together. Just about literally 2 days before the show, I get a call from the TV Guide channel. They want me to come to the Emmys to do the red carpet with Joan Rivers and Melissa Rivers. They were fashion consultants. They would comment on the fashions that the stars were wearing, good, bad, indifferent, whatever. And they decided, I guess TV Guide Channel decided they wanted a male presence. Somehow my name got to them. They liked me. They gave me the offer. I said, I can't make it. I've got friends coming in. I'm going to Paul McCartney. I just can't do it. And they said, please, 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 we'll fly you out that morning. We'll fly you home on the red eye that night. You'll be back in time for I think McCartney was on a Saturday and the Emmys were on a Sunday, and my friends were staying until Monday or Tuesday. It was kind of a long weekend type thing. So we saw McCartney, and I was going to have to leave my friends, you know, at my house by themselves while I went to L.A. They wouldn't stop pushing. They kept increasing the offer. First class air travel, you know, amazing day room, tuxedo rental, free shades. I think it was like, I don't know, $1,000 or something for the day. More importantly, there's some exposure, of course, outside of wrestling on the TV Guide Network, on the carpet of the Emmys with Joan and Melissa Rivers. I said, I can't turn this down after trying to many, many times. They finally brought me in. So I flew out that morning. I got there. Now, going to the Emmys was like trying to get into Fort Knox. You had to maneuver through all of these guards and show your passport and show your credentials and show more credentials and more credentials. So it was a long, arduous process to get in. I got in, got there really early, and they kind of prepped me and debriefed me and said, okay, you're going to stand here with the microphone. Joan's going to kick off the show, and after about 10 minutes, she's going to pitch it over to you. And then you'll take over, and she'll keep pitching it over to you and keep throwing it to you throughout. When she does, find some celebrities, ask them what they're wearing, and react accordingly. So I was cool with that. I thought, that's fine. I'd be able to, you know, improv with everybody here. And it was, of course, the Emmys. This is huge. But I was told I couldn't stand on the actual Emmy walkway. I had to stand on the little piece of turf, my little piece of turf that was designated to me, that was off of like the red carpet area. And if I stepped off it, there'd be a big bounce. Hey, hey, step back on your turf. Okay. So show starts, and I'm standing there, and I'm waiting to get pitched to. And I see a bunch of people. You know, all the people are there. It was, you know, Dennis Leary was there, who I'd known from the Christopher Reeve Super Skates that I played in. I think he kind of big leagued me and kind of said hi, but didn't really act like he knew me when I was like, hey, brother. Then David Boreanaz, same thing. He just completely dead assed me. So after about 30 minutes, I'm sitting there like, when is Joan going to pitch to me? And now I'm starting to get mad. And after 40 minutes, I realize she's not going to pitch to me. Like, I'm never going to get the call for this show. Meanwhile, I'm standing there and I'm on camera. So my cousin and my wife and everybody's watching at home and they see me standing in the background like a moron, but they never pitch to me. And then I just start laughing. I see Ricky Gervais. He's got that big shark smile, you know, that big, you know, hello, baby, or whatever he says. It's kind of Austin Powers, but you know what I'm talking about. And I saw him. He looked at me. He said, cheer up, mate, or something like that. And I was just like, you know, how this is just funny. I'm just going to enjoy myself here on the red carpet at the Emmys. So finally the show ends. I go backstage afterwards and I'm pissed off now. Like, I'm really angry. Like, what the hell? I wasted my time. You know, what kind of excuse could they give me? So the producer comes up to me and he's like, I'm so sorry. You know, Joan wouldn't pitch to you. I go, what do you mean? She's like, she wouldn't pitch to you. I kept saying, okay, throw it to Jericho, but she never would. And I found out that Joan and Melissa were not happy that I was there. And decided just to basically shut me out and said, you know, F you to TV Guide, F off. What are you going to do? This is our show. You're going to fire us if we don't pitch to this idiot kid, you know, or whatever I was, you know, idiot mid-30s guy. And then lo and behold, I'm standing there and Joan Rivers walks over. And she's like, oh, my God, who is this handsome guy? I saw you standing there the whole time. You know, I didn't know what was going on. I just couldn't believe how handsome you were. And nobody ever told me to pitch you. I just found out now that I was supposed to pitch to you and nobody ever told me. And I'm thinking to myself, you are so full of shit, lady. You know, I mean, I already know the story, so don't, like, you know, build it up like that. And I'm just looking at her, and of course she had a lot of plastic surgery done. You could just see it up close. I was just like, I just want to pie face her. I was just so mad. And then she's like, let me tell you, I feel so bad. Let me tell you what I'm going to do. Let me give you my assistant's card. I'll have him send you some autographed pictures. And if you ever need me to come on Raw and support you on WWE, just give me a call and we'll work something out and I'll come back you up. Okay. And I was just like, okay, lady. And I was like, wow, the gall. She didn't pitch to me. She totally shut me out of the show and then offered to mail me some autographed pictures and offered to appear on Raw, which had about 10 times the amount of viewers that her stupid TV Guy show had. And that was her payoff to try and placate me for not ever pitching to me during the Emmys red carpet celebration ceremony. So there you go. So Joan Rivers, much respect. Respect everything she did, but my experiences with her was a big Jericho raspberry. That's what I think of Joan Rivers on that day at the red carpet TV Guide Emmy Awards. Now, other than that, I'm sure she was a fine lady. I'm sure a lot of people will tell you that every other day of her life she was great. But on that day, I was not the biggest Joan Rivers fan. But hey, rest in peace, Joan Rivers, a true show business icon, a pioneer, and a very, very funny lady. No doubt about that. Speaking of funny, in the first part of the Triple H show, he mentioned that his very first interview was on WCW with a drunken Gordon Solie and how he was using a really bad French accent. Well, someone hit me up on the Twitter at I Am Jericho and sent me the link to this. And I want to play it for you guys because this accent is freaking awful. It's so bad. It sounds like Hunter now talking in a funny voice to make you laugh as part of a joke. But this was his serious French voice. It kind of almost sounds Arabic or Spanish or like Manuel from Fawlty Towers. Check it out.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Not a very popular victory over this young man just now.
Gordon Solie, let me start by apologizing to all the people here today because I know the men. They see the look in the eyes of their women when Jean-Paul walks into the building. They fall to the ground. They fall to their knees in awe of Jean-Paul.
Oh, come on. Now, let me ask you a question. I understand your background. I understand your expertise. What is your actual purpose for being here in the United States?
Gordon, I have had everything in my life. I have had the best education. All the money. I have had every woman I have ever wanted. But the one thing that I have never had is a championship. And that is why I am here, to be the world champion of WCW. And if it is Hulk Hogan, I will take whoever it is in the way of you to become the world champion. Whatever step I have to take, I will take it to become the greatest of all time.
Well, now, a question in this regard. You're talking about you would like to become the world champion. I can understand that. But Steve Austin is U.S. heavyweight champion. Lord Steven Regal, the world TV champion. You've got a lot of champions to go through if you want to get to somebody like Hulk Hogan.
It does not matter to John Paul who is champion. Whatever step I have to take, I will take them all on. I do not care. Everyone I will take on to get the championship that I want.
There you have it. The comments from Jean Paul.
I just think it's a little bit Gordon Solly. He sounds like a little chica, like a charo. I'm going on the Love Boat. I'm happy to be here, Mr. Rock. I know Mr. Rourke's Fantasy Island, but they're always on Love Boat and Fantasy Island. Great, great accent, but another great part two coming up right now for all of you. First of all, though, football season is officially here. The pros are kicking off their regular season this week. Still can't stop laughing about that Triple H interview, but this is when it counts, not just for them, but also for you and your season-long fantasy teams. Don't wait months to collect winnings from your season-long team. You can get them instantly. Turn all that research into instant cash this week at DraftKings.com. Get your piece of DraftKings Week 1 $5 million kickoff bash. That's $5 million. People, all you got to do is enter, and if you use my promo code Y2J at DraftKings.com, you'll get a free shot at that $5 million. That's right. Enter Y2J at DraftKings.com for free entry into the Week 1 $5 million kickoff bash. What are you waiting for, huh? You can become an instant millionaire. DraftKings.com. Bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Just enter Y2J at DraftKings.com for your free shot at a piece of that $5 million. And do it right now. You won't regret it.
Some angry member of the kitchen staff. Did you not tip them? Oh, a terrorist that ran that way. It was a run by fruiting.
Thank goodness football season is finally here. And no matter what you're into, we've got you covered. We've got the self-titled Ross Tucker Football Podcast. If you want to know what's going on in the NFL, we've got the Fantasy Feast. If you want to make sure you are best prepared for your fantasy team this year, or how about the Even Money Podcast for those of you that like to wager on the game.
Available now. Available now.
At podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, sitting here with Triple H backstage at SummerSlam in the Staples Center. Let's talk about the Monday Night Wars. I mean, how big of a blow was it when Scott and Kevin left and when Hogan showed up and the whole NWO thing started?
You know, it's funny. We didn't realize it at the time. It was like those guys were leaving. We did the curtain call thing. It was like buddy system.
Yeah, Madison Square Garden, all four of you came to the ring, heels and baby faces together, saying goodbye.
And Vince knew about it. It became bigger than it was when we got out there, and Vince knew about it. And when we came back, he even asked Sean, like, that means something to you? And Sean said, yeah. And he said, then I'm okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody came down other on people. Him, and, right? Yeah. And then it came down on me. But
oh, yeah, you took the heat for it, right?
Yeah. But, like, it was just what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, it was like, yeah, those guys went there, and like, you know, Luger jumped ship middle of the night all of a sudden. Like, I was with, like, me, Kevin, Luger were in the pool one day at the hotel, and like the next day Luger was on TV. I was like,
yeah, he's in WCW.
I thought I saw him this morning. Kevin's like, no, that was yesterday. I'm like, holy cow. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? It was like all this crazy stuff going on, and then, you know, our product was changing, and we knew somewhere inside you knew, like, holy cow, these guys, this is a good show, but it was competitive of like, mm-hmm. yeah, well, then we're going to put on a better show.
And yeah.
I don't know, as much as you thought about it, like, there was no choice. It just, once you made that decision of like, yeah, listen, if we don't step this up, we're going to go out of business. So mm-hmm. like, and then we never thought about it again. It was just go. And then it became very territorial.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and very like, you know, like, even like when you came in,
yeah.
it was, because you were in the trenches and it mm-hmm. was a war, and it as much as we would watch the show and all that stuff, and if we'd see guys in the airport, it was like, oh yeah, this is the boys, mm-hmm. like, and hey, yeah, and all that stuff, and Kevin and Scott and I, we still had great relationships, but like there was like, well, we ain't losing them.
Yeah.
And then it was us against them, and then when some new guy would come in, like, I can't come in here jumping in our shit. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and,
totally.
And that was, I think, hard for everybody. If, you know, looking back on it, if we'd have been smart, we'd have embraced all mm-hmm. that stuff. But also, too, we'd also been hit with the, like, hey, they stole Kevin and Scott, so we got Mark Merrow. You know what I mean? And, yeah. and like, oh, geez. Okay. You know, and then, we all got stuck working with them. We're like, oh, my God. Like, geez, we're getting the short end of the stick on this. So you never knew, like, dude, are mm-hmm. we getting, like, what are we getting? And, yeah, you know, yeah. like, and then, like, is this really going to work out? And yeah, just.
But it was real. I mean, people talk about it, but I mean, it was a golden era for wrestling,
yes.
for the fans, for the boys. But yep. it was, like you said, it was the real deal. WCW versus WWE.
Yes.
And some of us didn't want to be on that side, but you still were by proxy, you know?
Yeah. And even if you, like for you, even if you were over there thinking, like, man, if I could just get out of here and go over
yeah.
there. But we didn't see it that way.
Yeah. You're like,
we saw it as this guy is WCW all the way. And something happened. He got fired. And now he's over here thinking he's just going to jump on our,
yeah.
on our tail. Like, yeah. no. You know, and that's, it's, there's so much emotion when you're in that heat of that battle
yeah,
and,
yeah.
and in that war. And I mentioned this. I don't know if you and I have had this conversation per se, but I've had it a little bit with Steve. I had it big time with Rock a little while ago. I think I might have had a touch of it with Foley. Is it's so, it was so awesome. It was so hard and intense, and we were all so competitive, which is what made it so good. But you also didn't know how good you had it.
Yeah.
Like, how good it was. Like, I had no idea working with Austin every night how much fun. I knew it was fun, and I knew it was awesome, and I knew the buildings were sold out, and I knew it was crazy, and we were blowing a roof off it, and it was the greatest thing that we were doing. It was also Tuesday.
Yeah.
And we were going to do it again on Wednesday.
Yeah, that's
and
then right.
it was going to be Thursday, and you look at all those things and these magic moments that now you look back like, and people are going like, this magic, iconic thing mm-hmm. or something. You sent me a text the other day about our last man standing
14
match.
Years ago, 14 yeah.
14 years.
Yeah.
But like we did that. I knew it was good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the crap out of it. I didn't know it would stand the test.
Yeah.
I didn't know we'd be talking about it 14 years later, you and I. I didn't know. And it was hard to even appreciate, like, God damn, Chris is so good and so much fun to work with.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, because it was that
yeah.
still. Like,
it was almost, yeah, like there was a real competition there, and it pissed you off. Like, I was, you know,
yeah.
I knew how good you were, but it's like, I'm going to show this guy. Like, I'm going
to. Yeah, I'll prove it to him.
I'm going to prove it to him.
Yeah.
I'll tear the freaking house
down,
man.
And same for me. And then,
you know,
like, I talked about the Rock. Rock and I were just talking about this at WrestleMania. We were talking about that exact rivalry and how intense we were with each other. Like, mm-hmm. he and I got along, but we never got along.
Yeah.
Because our run was, like, I had the IC title, he had the IC title. Like, it just kept, like, we worked together for, like, I don't know, five or
years,
six years.
Yeah.
But from Hunter Hearst Helmsley and Rocky Maivia all the way through to The Nation and DX, all the way through to everything till he left.
To The Rock and Triple H.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as competitive as could possibly be that whole way,
mm-hmm.
and then he said the other day, like we were talking about at WrestleMania, he came out we were at WrestleMania, and he just came to me, and he was like, we were talking for a while, and he goes, oh, hey, by the way, I saw you really looking in great shape, and he started talking about shape. I said, I got to be honest, Rock. I said, you tweet those things out, like doing cardio, 4 a.m., time to go, no excuses, all that shit. I said, in my mind, I go, like, you know what? If he can do it, yeah. I'm going to get up at 4. How's
yeah,
that? And I'm going
right,
to do it.
Yeah.
Like, still that same thing. And he said, it's so funny because when you tweet something, I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Like, we still have that, like, yeah, but, you know, if Rock can do
yeah.
it, I'm going to, bastard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And
it's
I
awesome.
Think it's, I almost think that, you know, and Vince, I think that it was almost encouraged to have the guys have a little bit of, not heat with each other,
absolutely.
But heat, you know?
Absolutely. It's that fire in your belly and
yeah.
like competitiveness is good. Yeah, I looking back on it, they were definitely.
Yeah,
he said he encouraged.
Right,
he encouraged
I remember after about 3 months, I got called in there, and he
scream me out, man. I think I'd done something with China or whatever. And he was so mad at me. And he said, you better go apologize to everybody in DX. I came up to you. I said, do I have heat? And you were like, nuclear.
Yeah. I remember we sat in the boxes outside the office and talked for a long time. Yeah. But that was also probably the first real conversation I'd had with you.
That's right.
Right? Because we were all, I'll speak for us, we were all so guarded.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
You were an outsider, and we were all
and so by myself,
guarded.
Too. I had no friends when I came. Absolutely. I had no friends at all.
And you had this unbelievable hill to climb, and then we're looking at it and going like, hey, he's got promos on The Rock first hand? Yeah. You
know what I mean? Who's like, this guy thinking?
Who's that idea?
Right.
You know what I mean? And
Vince's idea, but
no,
I
know.
Take the heat for it. Yeah.
And a phenomenal one, right? But in our mind, we're like, hey.
Yeah.
Hey, we were just trying to whip this kid's ass, and now he's in here in the top spot? No. Yeah. Right? So... And you know, and we're guarded with it, and we're, you know, it just is what it is. But you don't know it at the time. But I think some of that was
looking
encouraged
back on it,
to because I'll tell you what, it made for great TV
and performances,
and it made for real performances,
matches.
And the emotion was real. And you know, I saw a clip the other day, and I think you and I spoke briefly about it. I just saw a clip that somebody put up. Because it was an anniversary date of that, the Monday Night Raw we did, where you came out and took the title, and and we did the fast count thing, and at the end of the show, I took it back or whatever. And I remember at that time, people saying like that was the perfect show, like the perfect Monday Night Raw, start to finish, and just the execution of it and all this stuff. And again, one of those things like. You know how good it is, but like there was no like.
It was just another night for us.
Yeah. But yet the competitiveness of it was like, screw Jericho on that. You know, like, and it was the greatest time to me for all those components to come together and just guys that were competitive with that environment, and that environment bred that competitiveness and that just desire to outdo. Sometimes. To personal irritation, sometimes to, you know, it went too, like, you know, Sean and Brett, it just went a step too far.
That's right. Yeah.
But that was magic.
Mm-hmm.
Magic right up to the point when they started to fight in the locker room, and then it was bad.
Yeah.
But, like, before that, oh, my God, that storyline was...
And the matches that they had in the ring.
Yeah, and all that stuff because of that competitive nature. And I think there was a lot of that with us. And we were all trying to prove ourselves, especially when Kevin and Scott and all those top guys left. The guys that were here, it wasn't like we were all those things when those guys left.
Mm-hmm.
Austin was the ringmaster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rock was Rocky Maivia. They were chanting, die, Rocky. You know, I was Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Yes.
The guy flitting around with the... chicks from Playboy or whatever, you know.
Like, yeah. And, which is not a bad gig.
No, that worked out, for a little bit. And then, but so we'd all, like, it was all scrape, scratch, and claw for your spot to get there, and we were all competitive with it of, you know, how to get there. And for me, like, when I was in DX and I saw Rock becoming the babyface behind Steve and all that stuff, and I was like, which I always gravitated towards being a heel anyways because I liked it better, but I'm like, now, for me, I remember having this conversation with Billy and Dog. They were like, don't. Why are you breaking DX up, man?
Oh, right.
Ride this thing into the ground. And I was like, because this ain't what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, see where those guys are? I'm getting there. And there's two clogs in the top on the baby face side, so I'm getting there as a heel.
Right.
And I'm going to stand side by side with those three.
And I'm going to work with them both.
With those two. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And I'm going to be the guy, but on the other side. We need Darth Vader around this place.
Yes.
And that's where I wanted to go. But that competitiveness of even then, man, it was just like you just... It was everything to us.
Yeah.
And to my point of the long-windedness of that is just you didn't know how awesome it was. And to step back now 20 years later, like I've said, and I'll say it to you right now, thank you for that time in our lives, man, because it was special.
I agree, man.
And same with Steve and Rock and Mick and Taker and Sean and all those guys. Man, we had something so special we had no idea.
Because there were so many of us that were at the top of our game at that time.
Absolutely.
You know, there was legitimately probably 10 to 12 guys. You just mentioned 5 or 6 of them off the top of your head. You know, everybody was just at the top of our game. And like you said, it was a golden era. And also, too, the crowds. Like you mentioned when I beat you for the title. If you watch that back, when Earl counts 3, that crowd loses their minds.
I remember,
you don't see that anymore.
I remember that moment.
Yeah.
Like, that was one of those distinct... There's a few moments to me that stand out as some of the louder pops I've ever heard. One was the first time we'd ever let anybody touch China, and Steve Stunder, and I don't remember where we were. I think maybe Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
It was a house show, like a live event. And we all came back and were like, holy, like even Steve was like, oh my God, that was unbelievable. And the same thing that night when we did that title switch, I remember coming out of the ring going like, holy cow.
That's what it's all about.
That was unbelievable. Yeah. Like, geez, I knew that was going to be good, but I didn't know it was going to be like that.
They were
man.
So
it was just a magic moment.
It,
yeah.
And another great moment too, it's almost the match that doesn't exist anymore because of the circumstances that happened after, but me and Benoit against you and Steve.
Absolutely.
In San Jose. I was there last night. And every time I go there, I'm like, this is where it happened. And, you know, like I said, we slowly gained a lot of respect for each other because we had a lot of great matches together.
Absolutely.
But that was the one where you tore your quad. I'm looking at the scar right now. Yeah. And I remember thinking, this dude is one of the toughest dudes I've ever been in the ring with in my life. Because you finished that match with a torn quad.
Yeah.
You came back in the ring to make the save with the sledgehammer. You took the walls on the – I mean, that was incredible, man.
I remember telling you, like, coming out, you said, oh, my God, are you okay? And I was like, absolutely not. Like, I couldn't even put weight on it. But I was like, whatever I've done, I don't think I'm going to make it any worse. So I was like, put the walls on me. And when you did, I remember you turning me over and thinking – really bad decision. like holy.
Because I tried to even keep, I mean, you can't keep a leg. I tried, but I remember saying.
Try to protect me, but,
should we do this? You're like, do it. And I was like, oh, man.
And then I was like you, I remember you putting me down on the table. I had to go back in to do the spot. I was like.
I don't know how you got back in.
Wow, yeah, like, oh, my God, am I going to be able to get up to the ring? And I was like, I got to go.
Yeah.
Like, I just, it didn't, you know how that's so fast.
Right,
right,
right.
Like it's going slow and. I was just not like thinking about it. And then I remember rolling to the floor and just curling up in a fetal position.
Yeah.
And just coming out and saying, what'd you do? And I said, I tore my quad. And because I felt it when it went, man, I felt it just roll up to my hip.
Really?
Yeah. And I said, I tore my quad. I think I tore my quad. And he said, no way. You couldn't have. You couldn't be walking on it. And I said, Chris, I'm telling you. And he put his hand in there and was like, wow, you did.
This is Chris the trainer.
Yeah, he could feel the divot and stuff. That's one of those things, like, for me, immediately, once you tell your quad, you forget how good the match is. And I remember I didn't see it for a long time. And then, I was in rehab one time or something, and I think the office had sent me a tape of it, you know, VCR tape. And I remember watching it back and like getting into the match so much that I forgot at the end I tore my quad and I went down. I was like, oh my God, I just hurt myself. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I was so in it, the match was so good. But
yes.
To your point, four guys, top of their game, that just.
The crowd was so excited, too. They wanted to see us win so bad.
Yeah.
And when we did, you know, and just because the match was so great. And that was one of those times that we deserved to sit there, the four of us, with a beer, you know,
absolutely.
Toasting. And we didn't get that because we had to go into the room. And you were, it's the worst thing seeing one of your brothers on the table after this great match. But it's like, it's not great because you got hurt. And it's like, oh, man, I just wish we would have had that moment.
It just pulls the rug out from under. It was the greatest thing ever. And when I watch it back, I remember thinking that same thing, like, oh, man, like, this will sound stupid. I felt bad. Watching it that day, I remember distinctly sitting in my room in Birmingham as at the Embassy Suites and still going through my rehab and watching it back, and I felt bad, like, oh man, I can't believe I robbed those guys of that feeling.
Yeah,
you know, like that's what you live for. Like
that's right.
Go back
that
and like,
magic moment.
Ooh, all that. You know what I mean? And I remember feeling bad, like, oh man, I can't, because in my mind I remember everybody coming in the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and oh, dude,
and Vince,
like, and everybody
too,
being down and a bummer, and then like. In my mind somehow, I was like, that was all on me. Like, I killed the whole buzz.
Yeah. Because we were like, I was like, oh, it's probably not back. What's a torn quad? Is that like 4 to 6? Like, no, that's about 8 months.
here's another thing. I remember coming up the ramp, and as we were getting the top of the ramp, thinking, I was doing the math in my head, 4 months rehab. Like, and I was trying to think, can I be back for Mania? Could I be back for, like, that was my whole.
For Mania, right?
Yeah. My whole mentality of, like, could I? Because it was. like May that I did it, but I was thinking like, man, could I don't think SummerSlam's an option, but I know I could probably come back for later. I didn't know how bad it was, and I didn't know Andrews were going to come to me and go like, yeah, you might never wrestle again.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't know all that at the time. So in my mind, I was just thinking, okay, I tore my quad. They reattach it. I know there's a time frame to that. So they reattach that thing and they do the biz. So I'm just trying to do the math. When I got there, that's why I never left Birmingham.
You just stayed there the whole time.
I lived in the Embassy Suites for 9 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just to rehab every day.
Andrews came, you know, told me that, and then I did the surgery and stuff. And he said, here's the thing. I don't know anybody's ever come back from this, from the level that you did it. I've never seen a contact sport athlete come back from this. So if you do, it's going to be awesome. It ain't going to be easy. I put it back together. It's back together as good as it can go. But now it's on your rehab. And I said, wow, so what does that mean? And he said, if I were you, I'd stay with the best. So I was like,
that's me, yeah.
Done, right? Because Kevin Wilk was there, and he's the best guy in the world. So I was like, all right, so done. So I called the office and was like, I need to stay down here. Like they were saying I might never wrestle again. So I got to stay here to rehab. And they were like, done. Stay where you're at. I lived in the Embassy Suites for 9 months. I stayed there until, you know, towards the end when I got better, I was flying and doing things here and there and stuff. But I stayed there till the very end. I remember packing my bags. The vignettes had been playing of my return. I remember packing my bags in the Embassy Suite and saying, like, all right, here we go. You know?
Yeah. You know, you came back from that and you had a few other injuries. But, I mean, over the you had so many classic matches. And, I mean, not just to, you know, to float your boat, but one of the greatest of all time. Psychology-wise, I mean, putting together matches. Did you feel like, you know, when you get to the mid-2000s and everyone kind of left, Steve's gone, Rock is gone. I mean, I'm still there, but Sean's gone. It's just basically you and a couple other guys. It was on your shoulders, man.
It started to get like when that herd started to thin out. Rock leaves.
Sean is gone. Sean Steve leaves, is Austin gone. Goes,
you've got we have a pretty solid deck, right, of guys. But like I felt like for like not to say it's me.
Yeah,
me, you, like the guys that were take.
Yeah,
like, that was that little rung of guys that now we had left, and it was like I never felt like, oh boy, this is on me now. I felt like none of this is like on us, and like by that point I'd realize like, well, there's some players here that are really, really good,
yeah,
and here's our upper echelon, but yet we've lost that very upper,
right? We've lost the 12 guys that we were talking about. We're down to three or four.
And then we went through the run where we started to run through some of the guys that didn't necessarily pan out, or that were here for a bit and left for a bit, and or here and didn't really work out the best way possible. But you know, there's a time frame in there where testament to how good the crew was that was here. I guess to say it this way, how when you get to the early 2000s, how deep of talent that roster became, that you had guys in the lower, upper, and middle of the card that were main event players.
Sounds
stupid. On any given night in any arena around the world. But truthfully.
Yeah.
Right? And then as those other guys started to leave, they were carrying that rung and that slot. And, you know, and still wasn't like business nosedived or anything.
Because
else,
then we had the Cena, Orton, Batista guys that came through the OVW system. You know, but let's talk about this. I mean, it's so funny. I always say like how busy you are and kind of laugh at that you got into wrestling so you didn't have to have a real job. And now you have a real job.
Somehow. Yeah. Vince finagled me into doing it. I don't.
So, I mean, like, how did you, I mean, you, for lack of a better word, I mean, you're going to be the guy that carries this company through the next, you know, 30, 40 years or whatever it may be. Organically, obviously, married Stephanie.
Yeah.
But how did that come into where Vince finally said, hey, man,
so
you're the next king?
It's funny for me that before I ever met Steph, I can look back on it and say I had that working relationship with Vince. Like when Russo left here, the day that Russo left, walked out, I went to Vince and I was like, wow, dude.
It was a big blow to all of us except for Vince.
Yeah. And like, so there had been a period of time leading up to that where on certain days of the week, I don't remember, it was like Tuesdays, I think, or something, where Vince would have these phone meetings and had asked Sean and I to call into them. And it would be Vince and Russo and me and Sean on the phone. And we would all just throw around ideas. And then they write the show. Sean and I would forget about it. They'd write the show, and they might call or something like that.
Okay,
but,
yeah, yeah.
But we were creatively working together. When Russo left, now Sean had kind of stepped out, and Russo leaves, and I remember going to Vince the day it happened and saying, I can only imagine, because it wasn't a team,
mm-hmm.
right? I can only imagine that he left. This isn't easy without people to bounce stuff off of. Mm-hmm. My phone's always on.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying I'm going to help. You know, we've talked on the phone and done creative stuff before, but if you need it, my phone's always on. And I remember Vince like taking a moment and being like, it's really cool. Mm. Thank you. I might take you up on that. And I left. I went home. Like we were off for a couple of days, and I went home. And I home one day. I got home from the gym, and I walked. My phone rang, and hey, pal. and he beat around the bush for a minute. And he was like, "Remember the other day you said if I need to bounce some stuff, if you had a minute?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you got a minute?" I'm like, "Absolutely."
Hmm.
And that started a conversation with us creatively. And then he said, "Hey, come to the production meeting this week and stuff." And I started doing that. You know, got massive heat.
Yeah, you're right.
But I would always say to anybody, Vince would say, listen, you got some heat with some of the guys. I'm hearing rumblings of the meeting. And I said, if you want me to come, I'll come. And you know what, Vince? If you want to tell those other guys, if they want to get up at 10 a.m. after yeah. we drove 5 hours, I love it. They mm-hmm. sit with me. I don't care. I'm not, you didn't pay yeah. me to do this.
Yeah.
So if you want me to come because it's helpful to you, I'll come, right? And that just started a creative relationship. That was long before I ever met Steph. So we already had that creative relationship going on. And then as time went on, it just continued. I don't know, however many years ago it was. He kept joking with me constantly. When are you going to stop rolling around in the ring, get a real job, do some real work, you know? And he was just 10 T's in the water.
Yeah.
And he would ask me all kinds of stuff about it. And then he would say, hey, you get home Tuesday night. Hey, Wednesday, I got this thing going on in the office. You need to come in, just sit on it. I'd love to get your opinion on it. Some executives are going to be pitching some stuff. I'd just love you to hear it. I'd go in, sit in that, right? And just little bits and pieces. And then
he knew. He had his plan.
When I tore my bicep,
mm-hmm.
I had to take 3 months off. And he, right after I did, like I literally made these movies. I made two movies back to back for the company, which mm-hmm. I wasn't supposed to do. I was supposed to make one, mm-hmm. and Batista was supposed to do the other one. And Dave decided he wanted to do it. And he left, and so like Vince, it was like he came over to my house, and he's like, "Hey, you got a second? I can stop by the house." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's not good, right?" So he comes over, and he's like, "I need you to leave tomorrow to go do this movie for Dave." And I'm like, come on, I haven't even read the script, right? I'm like, is it any good? And he's like, I don't know, I haven't read it, right?
So how hard
like,
can it be?
Yeah, just go do it. It'll be great. Tell the director what you want to do. So I go, I make these two movies back-to-back. While I'm there, I was having all these problems. I thought, well, my neck ends up being my bicep. I tear my bicep. So now I got to take like 3 months and not wrestle. Mm-hmm. And the day I do it, I go have surgery. And he like calls me. He's like, hey, I had this idea. Why don't you come back and shadow me at the office for the 3 months that you're off? You come in every day and you just do everything I do. You shadow me every day and all this stuff. And like, so that's what I do, right? And I go in there and I spend he was all like setting me up.
Yeah,
and
then
it was, you know, why don't you start working? You know, like I'll take you off the road on Fridays, but you'll work in the office on Fridays and then you'll go on the road on Saturday. Or, you know, why don't you come in? You got 2 days off. Just come in on Thursday, right? And there was little things. And then even when I'll take you off the live events, come in on Thursdays and Fridays, but take Wednesdays off because you need time to rest after TVs and all that stuff. And I was coming a half a day on Wednesdays, and then, right? It's just like he just went sooner or later. I'm like, wait a minute, I got an office and like all this. Like, what am I doing?
Wear the suit when you come to work next time.
What am I doing? And he's like, hey, I need you to take over this. Like, what? Me?
Yeah.
Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. Just. Oh, yeah, we get you there, right?
We're talking to Triple H, and coming up, we'll hear about the NXT Performance Center, how it was all his idea, how it came together, how it was one of the first projects he took on as a WWE executive. And you know I'm also going to ask him about his haircut. But before we go there, we got to take care of DDP and DDP Yoga. You know how much I enjoy doing DDP Yoga, how much it means to me, how much it's changed and improved my life, especially after a hard match, especially after a long plane flight. I know I'm going to have to do DDP yoga on Tuesday morning after Raw this week and my cage match with Bray Wyatt, which is okay because I've been doing DDP yoga for years. Saved my WWE career, and it's probably the main reason I'm still able to compete in the ring. But you don't have to be a pro athlete to do DDP yoga. You just have to be you. This workout program is great for people of all ages and all fitness levels. It's a cardio workout that's going to improve your strength and flexibility, and it's easy on the joints, low impact people. And because you listen to my show, the special Sexy Beast listeners, you can get a great deal on the DDP Yoga Max Pack. 15 workouts, you get a nutrition guide, recipes, and a poster to help you remember the 12 core positions of DDP Yoga, and you can even download the MP3s so you can work out wherever and whenever you want. That's what makes it so great for me when I travel. I can do DDP Yoga in my hotel room, on the Fozzie tour bus, anywhere, and you'll be able to do the same thing too. DDP is making it as easy as possible for you to get in shape and stay in shape. That's the important thing. So go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to take advantage of a special offer only available to you guys. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. But this offer is not going to last forever. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to take advantage of it now. Once again, ddpyoga.com/Jericho. You can find this great deal by going to podcast1.com, clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then hitting the Talk is Jericho button. One more time, that's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. And do it right now!
Good old JR Jim Ross here, and Stan Hansen, the legendary bad man from Borger, Texas, is on the Ross Report. But don't worry, folks, got the bull rope and tuned it back at home. But he's going to tell us how it was in the wild and crazy world of territory wrestling, how he became a mega star, and the challenges that he dealt with in Japan. The legendary Stan the Lariat Hansen, right now on the Ross Report at podcast1.com.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
This is Talk is Jericho.
Continuing on with Triple H here on Talk is Jericho. Now, Trip, we're talking about your other job for the WWE in the executive offices. You've already started to implement a lot of really cool things and ideas. You know, the Performance Center. I mean, that's pretty much your ideas.
So I was sitting in a meeting one day, executives, again, one of those ones where he asked me, come in, all the executives are going to give these their thoughts, like a five-year plan on the company and where they're going to go with stuff, right? And they get to the end, and everybody's giving their opinions and all the stuff. And Vince goes to me, and he's, what did you think? And I said, you know, from a business standpoint, I look at this, I'm just blown away by all the stuff that you guys do and how you implement them and how big this company is. And, you know, because at that point, I was still learning all that stuff about, like, Jesus.
So much to learn.
Place is, like, unbelievable. And I said, but for all these pitches and all this stuff and all this money being spent and all these great plans and all this marketing stuff and all that stuff, and I haven't heard one thing that says where we're getting new talent from. Mm. Like, well, like, what's the future? Because the indies are drying up, dude, and I don't see it anyplace else. And he was like, it was a good point. He kind of brushed it over, and then later he was like, talk to me some more about that, right? So we started talking. I said, I just don't, like, what are we doing? Like, where are we getting that from? Like we're spending all this money, but, like, we're not, you know, the NFL's got college, and they've got all this, like, it's a feeder system, man. And where's our feeder system? It was the world, but you shut them all down.
That's right. And it was OVW for a while, but then that died.
Well, so we had, like, these little tiny kind of things. And, you know, we had Dory Funk at one point kind of training a few guys that we selected here and there, right? And it was just like little kind of haphazard things. And then they had switched over to doing Tampa, and it seemed cool. But I had been down and seen Tampa, and it was small, and it was, you know, it was...
Yeah, kind of.
Like, even the TV show was like a two-camera shoot, and it was just like... It was indies, and it was just... It was anybody else's wrestling school. And then when I came in full time, so Vince was like, you know, take a few months, dig into a lot of different stuff and see what you want to take on. The first thing I came to him and said I want to take on is I would like to start something like called talent development, where we where we put more concentrated effort into figuring out where we want to go. And then, you know, once I started doing that, I started figuring out a plan. And then I could see that there was a lot of times where we had an opportunity to maybe get a guy who played in the NFL, mm-hmm. or who was a collegiate wrestler or something. But like, yeah, here, you want to try this wrestling thing out? We're not going to pay you hardly any money, and we got this crappy place that you can go work out yeah. at, and it's in the middle of nowhere, and maybe you'll make it, maybe you won't. Like, yeah. It's really not that intriguing, and I felt like we needed, you need a carrot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you and at the same point in time, like we talked about WCW, you know, there's a point in time where I went back in my head and I thought, what are, if I was 20 years old today and I wanted to get here, everything I know today, what would I want to have to succeed? And then I went back and I tried to put it all in one place, right? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. and then put in a place that looked awesome, that was in a great location, that was in a way that you could do it economically and would make it so that if you were a kid that played, because the thought that we're going to get all these indie guys, they're just not out there.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to find what they did in the old days is find two big bouncers at the club and make them the Road Warriors.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if I want to get these guys from a D1 college that played in the NFL for a cup of coffee, you know, average length of time in the NFL is 3.5 years.
Yes.
They let go of 400 guys a year, right? In that group somewhere are prospects for what we do. And if you're going to get them, they've trained that way their whole life. They don't care if they're making big money. They don't care if the opportunity's there. I go like, hey, you can go to Orlando. It's nice. Mm-hmm. It's sunny. It's a great location. It's an easy in-and-out access point in this awesome facility mm-hmm. that rivals what you had in college and what you maybe had in the NFL. You have coaches. You have all these things. They go like, I'll do that. You know what I mean? Because, like, yeah, I'm 21, but, like, really when you're that age, it's not about the money. It's like, yeah, I want this badass it's place to train yes. in, and I'm going to try to do this. And if it's fun and it works out, and then – so you just kind of creating that system, you know. And mm-hmm. And then trying to put all – when we designed it, when I pitched the idea to Vince about creating a bigger, better location and why, he was, like, fully into the idea. And then he said, well, what would you do? So I said, let me think about it for a while. I went, kind of, what would I put in there? And then how much will that all cost?
Yeah, right.
And then, you know, that's one thing I had to learn on my feet was, so then I had to go put, like, and have people help me. It's like I had to go put my ideas down, figure out how they were going to all come to be, how much they cost, then put, like, a business proposal together and go to them and say, here's the performance center, or well, I don't have a name for it yet, but yeah. here's what I want to do, and here's why I want to do all these things. Here's what they cost, and here's how much money I'm going to need to do it. And I went through all of it, and then he was like, I didn't forget, it was like very nervous for me because I wasn't like real skilled at doing that. And he like went through all this stuff, and then he was like, congratulations, let me know when it's going to open. And I was like,
and it's up to awesome, you, man. You
know,
yeah.
But now I got to go do it.
Yeah.
So now, and try to do it for budget. And, you know, it was learning under fire business and very cool. But I'm very proud of the place from a, you know, how guys can learn the business. And then I said the Jazz for me now, man, as much as it was blowing the roof off the place then, somebody asked last night in the panel, like, what do I prefer to do? To be honest, now when I have to work, it's kind of like the...
when you have to wrestle?
Yeah, as much as I love the time I get in the ring, I'm like, the rest of it is like on a Monday night when I get done doing everything else and at 7:45, I go like, oh my God, I'm in seg one. Holy cow, yeah. Jimmy got a promo or like an idea what they want me to say. And it's a really almost like a burden in some way. And then, but the man that juice for me now is watching The Shield or like watching Bray Wyatt going back into that system when he got pushed back down as Husky Harris. Mm-hmm. And then, I will preface this with I am in no way taking any credit for this, and I've told him this, and I've said it to everybody a million times. Nobody made Bray Wyatt but him.
Mm-hmm.
He created it, designed it, started it.
It was all his character, right? Yeah.
Him, he deserves all the credit in the world. Some people helped along the way or helped set tables and things like that, mm-hmm. but man, it's him. So I'm not trying to take any credit for it at all. But to help cultivate that out of his mind, see it start from a video that I got of like, what do you think of this? And be like, dude, that's kind of cool. Yeah. Like, keep going down that road and then watch it evolve and see it get there and then put it together and put these guys with him. Holy cow. And then seeing it go. And then, you know, he's going to get the opportunity. Like, we just shot these rough shot vignettes and then we showed him to Vince, like, to say, like, what do you think about this? And he was like, putting that one on the air tonight.
Oh, right. You know? Just the vignettes of him, like his family in the backyard, backwoods.
Yeah, right. And that one's going on the air tonight. Like, holy cow, here we go. Now we got to figure out what that entrance is. Because then he's just walking down the ramp, right? So now we come up with this idea of the lantern. Like, to see all that stuff go to where it is and now sit here today at SummerSlam and watch him go to the ring with you. Or, you know, like, man, to me, that's just, it's living vicariously through them, but it's almost as cool as it was.
Yeah, it's a yourself. Different world
it's
now. Just,
it's a different thing, but man, it's so cool. And to see it come out of like the opportunity that they had and the things that they had out of that environment, the Performance Center and Full Sail and NXT and what that meant to them. Because the other key to the Performance Center is Full Sail University and NXT, because if you go there, it's just a shrunk down version of Raw and SmackDown. Mm-hmm. It's a multi, like, six camera shoot. It's the ramp is the same angle. Oh. It's a little smaller distance wise, but it's the same. The hard camera's on the other side, but there's the hard cameras. There's a jib. There's ground held handheld cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is the same. They have to do their promos backstage. They have to do vignettes. They have to. Everything is exactly the same. It's just a smaller version. And that the one of the best compliments I ever got was Summer Rae after she came out of there. We were in London. She started at WrestleMania. We were in London, and I said, "How you doing? Like, are you freaking out yet? Like, have you got over the freakout point?" She goes, "Funny you should ask. I had like an epiphany moment today." She said, "I had been so nervous and so worked up, almost like ready to throw up every time I'm ready to go out there." And she said, "I was standing on the ramp today while they were building the stuff, and she said, I'm watching them set things up, and I'm like, it's the exact same setup as Full Sail." And she said, like, I looked at it and was like, that's the same, just the building's bigger.
Yeah.
And she said it was almost like this calming thing, like, I know how to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the point.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's exciting because the roster, I mean, it's in good shape. You know, we talked about that before. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of good guys here, a lot of good guys down there.
And then for me to have guys like you come down there.
Yeah.
Or you know, Cena or whoever come down there and be down there and work with those guys a little bit, or get in the ring with them, or talk to them, or come and do the show and watch their matches and go, try this, try that. Like, that to them,
it's invaluable. It's
unbelievable the opportunity they have. I say it to them all the time. If to those guys down there in the Performance Center, I said, we expect a lot of you and we're tough on you, because I am giving you more than anybody in the history of this business. Everybody that's come before you has had less given to them than you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't succeed, it's on you. We expect more because we're giving you more.
Mm.
You know?
That's a great point, yeah. Will Vince ever retire?
No.
Yeah.
No. You know what? It's almost like when he's tired, he wants to go to the gym. He wants it. It's almost like tired is the enemy, and it makes him want to do more.
Yeah.
He works more now. He works longer hours. He sleeps less. You know, I'm telling you, Ed, he'll leave the office at nighttime and there's nobody there, but he's still in his office working. And then he goes downstairs. They'll text me at, you know, 1 a.m. And not that I'm just finishing training too, but he's texting me at my house. He's finishing training. And then, you know, he doesn't sleep a lot. It is what he is.
Mm-hmm.
And say it all the time, like, people are like, oh, he's being groomed to take over. No. It's only if he dies.
Yes, right.
That is
the day he dies, you're taking over.
The day he dies, apparently, I take over, unless I'm the one that killed him and I go to jail.
You'll be the next king, right? So you said you're like Prince Charles.
Yeah.
How was it cutting your hair?
You know what's funny? Vince said to me for years, he'd always joke about hair versus hair matches, and it just got to me one day, like, I was, you know, every day you're putting the stuff up and doing all the things, you know, right?
Ponytail.
Yeah, and as much as I love the hair because it created movement in the ring and all the stuff, and, you know, you and I are marching for the heavy metal.
You're a rock guy, yeah.
Right, yeah. Man, I've been thinking about it for a while. Like, how much time would I save every day putting this? I never wear it down anymore because I'm never in the ring. I'm never on the road. I'm in the office every day. I can't be walking around there in my suit and tie with my hair all down. And, you know what I mean?
Like,
I
look like
Michael Hayes.
With your gimmick bag around your waist.
Yeah, my fanny pack. So, you know, and finally I just bit the bullet and went and got it done. It was awesome, right? And now it's almost like like an obsession now. Like, I can't get it short enough.
Yeah.
Right? But so when I cut it, I had him cut the ponytail off, like band it and cut the ponytail off, and I had it put in a frame with a thing on the bottom that said, you always wanted to get it? Here you go. I gave it to Vince as a present. It's sitting in his office on the wall with my ponytail.
That's great. Favorite band of all time?
Probably Metallica.
Metallica,
I had to, if I had to pick one, you know, obviously everybody thinks I'll say Motorhead on that, and obviously huge.
Yeah.
For me, for my character, that was the mm-hmm. thing. When they were trying to create my new song back years ago, I kept saying, can it sound more like Motorhead? I wanted that aggressive sound. And then they said, can we just get Motorhead to do it? Yeah. And I was like, that'd be awesome. Like,
even
I
better.
I didn't know that was an option. But yeah, Metallica, probably for me, it's always my go back to music. You know, they're just...
And you got to go to the tuning room that one time where they practiced.
Yeah, that was really cool. That. Yeah, yeah. And we just happened to come backstage, and Hetfield invited us to come backstage while they were playing that on that tour. They were playing a lot of songs they hadn't played for yes. a long time. So they were going in the. It was amazing to
a little
sit
room
there.
About this size, a little dressing room.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, and sit there and watch them play and be like, "That's not how it goes." You know what I mean? And then, like, yeah. they'd have to listen to them, like, "Oh yeah," and, like, songs that you think like you've listened to a million times they might not have listened to since
that's right yeah
it's crazy to think of. And you know, another cool thing is they you know, they dig what we do, I think, mm-hmm. and in some ways, and then in working with us. So when I used For Whom the Bell Tolls at WrestleMania
right.
that
yeah,
one
yeah,
year
yeah.
and so I'd had that mask, and I had
that Tom Savini
yeah. made, right, and obviously is a big deal, very expensive, so I had a second one made. And I brought it to, we went to the Big Four concert mm-hmm. in New York, and I brought it and gave to Hetfield as a gift.
Oh, cool.
Which he was, you know, was like, oh my God, that's so cool. And then kind of stayed in touch with their road guys, and he sent me a photo of it, and it's in their rehearsal room at whatever that is, a Q Prime.
Yeah, Q Prime
Management. They have their, they have like a...
Oh, in the Presidio in San Francisco.
Oh, is that
yeah,
where it is?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. But I guess there's like a, they have like a big rehearsal room.
Yes.
There. They have all these gimmicks and everything on the wall, and the guy sent me a photo of it in a case.
Oh, that's cool.
On the thing, and he said, he goes, you don't know how many celebrities have come in here to talk to these guys in their rehearsal room and put that on. Which is cool to me. Just like that they have something of mine.
Yeah,
they,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
They have out. Is like yeah. mind-boggling to me. You know,
we did that tour with them last year in Australia,
which had to be unbelievable.
Oh, dude, it was so cool.
It's
you
the
know?
Coolest thing for you. I mean,
completely
like, music-wise. Now you're like hanging with those guys.
So I was like, you want to go to a show tonight? I'm like, yeah. And we go to this stupid little punk club with this crappy little band. But I'm hanging with Lars.
Yeah.
We got a gig tomorrow in Perth, Australia.
Yeah,
you know?
yeah.
It was pretty cool, man. But
me and Lars.
Yeah. You know, I was like, it's pretty cool to have you here in Perth, Australia. You know.
You know what was funny too. Like, because of doing the music and stuff, I got tight with Lemmy. And I talked
yeah.
to him fairly regularly and got very tight with Lemmy, which was mind-boggling to me. And then the first time I met Metallica, very first time I met Hetfield, when we went to the backstage with them in the
yeah.
practice room, that's all he wanted to ask me about was Lem.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, they all kept bringing up Lem to me and talking about Lem. And I was like, it's so funny to me. Everybody is a mark for something.
Yes.
Right?
That's
like,
right.
Those guys are marked for Lem. Like, I watched Slash come out in L.A. one time in this building, and Lem was, you know, he'd come see me work, and he'd just go to the ring, and he'd watch my match, and then go sit in the limo and wait for me to come talk yeah. to him after. And I went out to talk to him after, and Slash comes out, and Slash wanted to know if Lem would take a picture with his son. And, like, Slash was like a little kid talking
yeah,
to Lemmy,
yeah.
like, sorry to bother you, Lem. Yes, anyway, and he was, like, seemed all nervous, and I'm thinking, like, holy crap, like, this is, it's just, like, surreal to me
yeah.
that he's starstruck
yeah.
by Lem, and, like, it's just funny. Everybody's a marker.
This is it. No matter how old we get, you're still
a fan. Matter.
Like, when
yeah,
Ozzy showed up here, it was like, oh, my God, Ozzy's
yeah.
here.
Yeah, it's another thing I've gotten to do, you know, this job will let you do the coolest things mm-hmm. in the world. One of my treasured things I have is at home. I have a picture, and it's me flexing with both titles on because I had done a
for Ozfest.
For Ozfest, yeah. and Ozzy's biting my bicep. And to me, it's just the coolest picture. One of the coolest pictures I have because
yeah.
I've, like, you know, my whole life just idolized.
That's right. And, Ozzy, yeah.
Yeah, his music meant so much from Sabbath to him. Mm-hmm. And, just,
and then you get to work with him.
Yeah.
Hard to choose just one, but give me your favorite match or a couple of your favorite matches that stand out to you.
Hard to choose one. You know, there's a ton of them that mean a lot to me. You know, obviously, like the SummerSlam one when Shawn came back.
And oh, that's great.
It
yeah.
meant, because it meant so much to him to be able to come back and to do it and not know what he had and then mm-hmm. have it turn out so good. There's one that always sticks out to me, though, because it was like a turning point for me, is I had a street fight at Rumble in 2000 with Mick Foley that was one of those ones where, like, the Rumble was big that year,
mm-hmm.
but I had won the title and... I wasn't a top guy mm-hmm. yet, but I had the title, and I was trying to be the top guy, and they were trying to make me the top guy. And Mick wasn't necessarily, he'd done the stuff with Taker, but he was, you know, he was trying to do the same thing. And we had an opportunity to be, we were the main event at the Rumble, outside of the actual Rumble match. And it was like one of those matches where I remember getting done the match, thinking it was great, and then kind of like out of the weeks coming out of that, feeling like everybody's attitude towards me changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like one of those.
It put you to the next level.
Yeah, it's like a turning point match to me. And, you know, and Mick has said the same to me. Like, he felt that way too. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of thanks to him in doing it with me. And you know, that's another thing. It's like we all grew so much together. Like, I had great rivalries with Mick, and mm-hmm. we both grew mm-hmm. into something more than that. Same with me and Rock. And, like, it's just so many things that you look back on, and then there's the ones you forget about even, and you look back and go, oh, God, I forgot.
Yeah, that so there's awesome. The network, you forget all the stuff that's on there. People remind you, remember when you did this? You're like, no.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And then, you know, to come out of ones where, like, last year, you know, to work with Daniel and mm-hmm. that had to be a part of that moment for him, and it was really cool. It's just a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
That, you know, are cool matches. It's hard to put your finger on.
It is.
It's just, man, I can't say how, you know, everybody... This will kill my image off somewhat. But, like, I can't say how lucky I was for all the guys that I had to work with. Mm. You know,
it's a great point,
right? I look at my career and I go, like, wow, I got here and I had Brett and Razor and Kid and Sean and all these guys that I worked little programs with, whether, you know, on the road, mm-hmm. not necessarily mm-hmm. on TV. Right. And then it transitioned, and then I got to a different thing, and then, you know, I was surrounded by all these guys in DX, and then once you get past that and start to get into the other stuff, it's like you and Austin and Rock, and like when you start to put together the guys that we all had to work with, it's like wow, like, you know, it just, I could have sucked and done that, you know what I mean? Like, it's you start to think like, geez, it was that, and that's what was my point earlier about how lucky we all were. He's like, you don't realize it at the time, like, it's just like doing it, but when you look back, you go, it's like a who's who of awesomeness in the business, right?
And Hall of Fame cavalcade
all the way around,
of all the guys,
all the way around, and so, man, it's just I look back on that, and I'm so thankful that I had all those guys around. Mm-hmm. Maybe didn't think about it that way at the time, or you know, but like now, I look back and go, like, man, just so lucky, such in the right place, right time for all of it.
Yeah,
it's just awesome,
dude. Thank you so much, man. This has been great.
Thank you.
I feel like, chat.
Yeah, it's funny because you know, we don't really get a chance to talk that much, and you're always doing business and stuff, and I feel like we could talk for a day.
That's why I love doing this, because I just get a chance to talk to my friends. Yeah. How often do you get a chance to talk for an hour and a half?
Yeah,
you know,
it's
cool,
awesome.
Man.
So thank you very much.
Thank you, brother. Thank appreciate you. It, man.
Appreciate it.
Oh, all of you, come over here. Big group hug. Group hug. Ooh. Do you mind if I kiss the monkey? Ooh, hairball.
Thanks to Triple H for being here this week. The biggest guest in Talk is Jericho history, and what a coup it was to get him. And thank you for picking up the new Fozzy album, Do You Want to Start a War? What a bargain. If you don't have it, go pick it up now and do it through the Amazon link. It totally helps out my show. Really easy to find. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcast free banner at the top of the page, then click on Talk is Jericho. You'll see all three of my Amazon links in the US, the UK, and in Canada too. You can also grab the Fozzy record while you're there. Amazon's got it for just $5.99, like I say, limited time offer. Every time you shop at Amazon through my links, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees or hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done, and you're helping me out in the process. We will see you this Monday at Raw in Baltimore, Jericho versus Wyatt, cage match. Then on Tuesday, I will be in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania for SmackDown. Don't forget, too, Fozzy goes on tour September 17th with Theory of a Dead Man. Headlining gigs, Fozzy headlining on September 18th in Abilene at the Lucky Mule, September 25th, Beckley, West Virginia in Munchies, September 28th, Parkersburg, West Virginia at the Sixpence, October 1st in Fort Wayne at Pierre's, and October 5th, return of Fozzy to New York City at the Gramercy Theater. We want to sell all those headlining gigs out. If you're in the area, go check for tickets, FozzyRock.com. You can also get VIP packages as well. well. Got another two amazing group of guests next week. So excited about all the stuff that's happening in Talk is Jericho, all the stuff that's happening in the world of Y2J, and all of us that are together on this ride. Thank you so much. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. In the meantime and in between time, that's it. Another edition of Talk is Jericho. We'll see you next Wednesday with a yeah.
Nanu, sayonara, shalom, das bedonya, ciao, ding long salvi. From all of us here on this wonderful little planet of sand, catch you later.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million. What color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo!
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors and shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Syria Peace Talks? I'm Ben Thomas with an AP News Minute. Syrian rebels have rejected peace talks being proposed by Russia. They're accusing Moscow of failing to pressure its ally, President Bashar Assad, to end the conflict. Christmas may be over, but the shopping isn't. Hazel Ginn was at Macy's Herald Square in New York today.
It's not too bad. Even we went up to the 9th floor, and we managed to get in a queue about 4 deep, so not bad. Yeah, and then we went to another one, and it was only a couple, so we kind of timed it well, I think.
America's research group, which focuses on consumer behavior, projects holiday sales up about 5% this year. Harley-Davidson is placing a renewed emphasis on teaching people to ride as part of its efforts to attract more customers. The company is expanding the number of dealerships with a Harley Riding Academy. The move comes as the industry grapples with years of declining sales and an aging customer base. I'm Ben Thomas.